welcome to another Distinct Nostalgia, and we're keeping up the comedy theme as we meet a regular from the world's longest-running sitcom, The Last of the Summer Wine. Ashley's been talking to Mike Grady, who played Thora Hird's character's son-in-law, Barry, one half of Barry and Glenda, the show's younger contingent. Last of the Summer Wine was created in 1973, so it's almost 50 years old this year. Written by Roy Clark, who also created Open All Hours and Keeping Up Appearances, it was, of course, set in the beautiful West Yorkshire countryside. Have a listen to this and see if you can spot Mike's uncanny impression of Peter Salis. Enjoy.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
So we return to the second part of my interview with Mike Grady. And of course, our main focus is on Last of the Summer Wine. Now, obviously, the main characters who have been there, two of the main people have been there right from the very beginning. Several people actually have been there from the start. We're talking...
Peter Salis, there was Bill, was Peter, there was Kathy and... John had died, but there was still Jane was still there.
Yeah.
Jane
so,
Freeman.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just talk about some of those a little bit. So they've been there for a long time, since the very beginning. And the programme had evolved quite a bit. I remember the very first episodes. I don't remember them because I was too young to watch them. But
yeah.
I've watched them since, from 1973. And it was a slightly different show then. It was fairly slow. There was certainly some serious elements to it. Like all comedies, you know, there's often a bit of black humour or whatever. And I think, I thought it was brilliant right from the very start, some of those very early episodes.
Gosh.
But what were people like? You know, Peter Salis was there all the way through. What was he like as a guy to work with?
Peter was he was quite reclusive. He was quite self-contained. Alan had explained to me why they were rejigging the series before I went into it. He said that they've been together a long time already, and it's a little fractious. It's not entirely comfortable at the moment. One of our leading actors is leaving. We're replacing him with Michael Aldridge, and we're just hoping it'll work out, you know. So it hadn't been a happy ship, I think, until then. Michael Aldridge came into the series. Michael was a party animal. He would start the day, you know, with everybody, would have a good time. This is going to be a great day. And everybody had a great day because Michael said, we're going to have a great day. And everybody would want to work with him. Everybody would want to go in, do their thing. Peter responded to him enormously well. And they became very firm friends. He was his sort of Peter's father confessor. And he was, you know, if there was any issue, Michael would be the man to go to because he was an ebullient creature who knew how to get on with things, you know. So Peter, I think, he could be quite sharp, but he was always very, very good with me. I gave him no problem. He could pull a few... He would be funny sometimes just for the sake of it. We were filming in a pub one day and he was sitting in the dark while the filming was going on at the end of the bar. And he was quite elderly by then. And he said, I sat down with him. I said, hello, Peter, how are you doing? And he said, okay. He said, is that Mike Grady? And I said, yes, it is. It is, Peter. He said, I've just had the most awful experience. I said, well, do you want to tell me about it? You know, I was concerned. He said, I've just been into the lavatory and you know my eyesight isn't what it was. Well, I've just spent 2 whole minutes trying to dry my hands under the condom machine. I don't know if anything that was true or if you just winded me up, but it was very funny. He would do that.
And a great impression of him there. You were fantastic.
Thank you.
That's really good. That's really good.
Would you like a piece of cheese?
Yes, you could do that. You could. Yeah. Why don't you line? You should be doing that.
I'll give Nick Parker a ring and see what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, no. He was. I mean, he was great, and obviously lived to a ripe old age, didn't he? Old Peter Sellers.
Those guys, they lived into their 90s.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely. I mean, they all did. It was just amazing.
What about Bill then? What was Bill like?
Bill was separate from everybody. He lived separately. We all stayed in the same hotel. Bill rented a cottage out several miles away. He was very much his own person, got on with his life and didn't mix socially with us. Had a great career, was very highly thought of by lots and lots of people.
Oh, he was in tons of films, wasn't he, back in the 50s and 60s?
Loads of films, yeah. Was immensely brave when he was dying. We were filming right up until a few weeks before he died, and I remember he'd lost a lot of weight and was ravaged with this illness. And he was out in the hills and the roads and the farmyards performing really bravely. So that's how I will try and remember him, as somebody with great courage.
Now, for a lot of people who remember Last Summer Wine, there was obviously different combinations of the trio. But I think for most people, they probably think of Compo, Clegg and Foggy. They think of Brian Wilde's character. Now, of course, when you came in 1986, he wasn't there at that point, but he did return, didn't he? I think it was 1990, he came back into the series.
So he came into it as I was kind of going out. We did a series together. He did the series. I was in and out of it. But he didn't. Another one, he was very separate. He stayed away from things. He was a perfectly nice man, very nice man. I thought he was a great actor. I remember him being in lots of TV stuff when I was a teenager, watching it week after week and seeing him in various plays. And he was a really interesting actor. And of course, he'd had the Porridge and all those things as well.
Of course.
So he has a great career. But he didn't he wasn't a great socializer, a great mixer. He liked to be somewhere separate. So we didn't really get to know each other, unfortunately. But I admired him and thought he was very, very good in it. But then I went off and did other things for a few years anyway. So I don't know if he stayed with it then or not.
But what was interesting is the characters that he played in Porridge and in Last Summer Wine were very different, weren't they? They were extremely
different. Yeah.
He showed certainly proved his versatility at that.
Oh.
In fact, the character in Last Summer Wine was more like Fulton Mackay's character in Porridge, wasn't it? You know what I mean? It's like
Correct.
A reversal in that sense, you know, which is interesting. So you got those. They're the three I think a lot of people remember, and of course, Kathy Staff playing
Nora Batty was an icon created mostly by Terry Wogan.
On
his radio show.
She played some quite iconic characters over the years. She was Miss Luke in Crossroads, of course.
She was.
And she was, obviously, she played the character in Last Summer Wine. And then she was also a regular reoccurring character in Open All Hours as Mrs. Blewett.
So she was.
who was always sort of talking about who was dying, you know, so they're not got long at number nine and all this kind of stuff, which is quite good. What do you think about that relationship, that the constant relationship they had over the years between Compo and her character?
It was the relationship was slightly weird, but you know, it hit a chord with the public, that's
yeah,
for sure.
It did. But what I'm saying is, do you think because when you look at it, back at it, people would say to an extent it was sexist, although actually Compo's character does get his comeuppance constantly, so it's not as if she doesn't, you know, fight back against it kind of thing. But do you think that would work now?
I think not. No, I think probably you'd have to rethink that. But Roy was writing Seaside Postcards, basically.
Of course.
I mean, that's not to take anything away. I think the scripts were fantastic. He also liked a joke. but in a very different way to John Sullivan. But he, his stuff was rooted in the period when a bit of slap and tickle was kind of very acceptable, I suppose, would be a word that you might say that was very common in films. A sort of romance of that sort, one-sided, but, you know, kind of welcome, you know, will they, won't they kind of romance was acceptable. I think it was all right. I've never heard anybody being offended by anything Roy wrote. Either people don't like it at all, or they've never seen it, or else they are devoted to it.
Yeah.
And Roy wrote so many series, like John, really. He wrote so many wonderful series. He wrote Mrs. Bucket, whatever that was called.
Keeping Up Appearances.
Keeping Up Appearances. And he wrote, as you say, Open All Hours, both versions with David in both series. And you can play, I think you can play all of those series now.
Yeah.
And still find an audience. The beauty of Summer Wine was that, and I still come across this, was that it was for all generations. The number of people I know said, oh, I remember that series. I used to sit on my grandma's knee on a Sunday night and watch that. And it would take my mind off the fact that I had to go to school the next day. While mum and dad went down the pub for an evening pint, I would stay at home with gran and watch the series. And so many people had that experience. It was something that kind of bonded generations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And then, of course, as you came into it in 1986, this is when they started to expand the cast a bit more, of course.
Cool, not half.
Massively. I mean, everybody who's anybody ended up in Last of Summer Wine, didn't they, over time? And so you had some real interesting characters. I mean, people forget this, but Jean Alexander was in it for a hell of a long time, wasn't she?
These are great actors. Yeah. These are just people. I was in awe of these people all the time. I mean, I thought I pinch myself sometimes, think, wow, that I knew them and I worked them daily and we conversed and we chatted and we gossiped and we colluded, you know, and we laughed together, you know, with people that I could only dream about, really.
I interviewed Jean about 2 or 3 years ago before she died, and she was very well known for, mainly well known for Hilda Ogden, which she played fantastically. But she said her favourite part was playing Auntie Wainwright.
Was it really?
Preferred Auntie
Good
Wainwright.
Good Lord, yes. I'm so pleased about that. Thank you. Yeah. I didn't know that. She was magnificent. They were just they were people from, you know, like. They'd all had a history. They were all of an age. They were kind of a generation ahead of me. And they'd all been in the war, that one way or another. Peter had been in the services. Frank had been in the Canadian Air Force, bizarrely. Didn't see action because he was a radio operator, but he'd finished before. But they'd all had, then, before the war, they'd had a history in the theatre. I mean, Frank had... Peter had been in the theatre with Laurence Olivier, Vivian Leigh, people like that. Frank had been in the theatre with some of the greatest actors that we'd ever known. They all had this amazing history. And Jean was, of course, you know, I thought Hilda Ogden was a wonderful creation, which, rather like Violet, she had that speed of delivery which you could completely rely on, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They were magnificent.
Absolutely. But there are all these new characters and combinations of characters. So you got, you know, we recently lost Robert Fife, but, you know, that sort of storyline between him and his wife and his, you know, his sort of bit on the side, as it were, that went on for years. That could have been a series of its own, couldn't it, in a way?
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
I mean, there were series within series. Like the policemen always wanted their own series. They always thought they should have their own series. Roy wrote for Juliet Kaplan, a one-woman show that she took on, she did on her cruise ships. The numbers of people who used to come up and chat to me about the series, and the thing they loved was the film with Gene, the stuff with Gene Ferguson and Juliet and Robert Fife, you know. And they just loved that trio for some reason. It was illicit, but it never went very far. It stopped at the edge of the comic postcard, you know, and it always ended up with him covered in mud. And they were, you know, as they got older, they still were very brave. I mean, they got on that bicycle, they had that thing and rode around all over the place. They were an amazing bunch of people.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
It was very funny. That could have been a series on its own. But they all fitted in. They only worked really within the context of that village, of that summer wine thing.
Ashley's chat with Mike Grady continues on Distinct Nostalgia in just a few minutes.
Ah, the tones of Distant Hills by the Simon Park Orchestra. The closing theme to the classic TV series Crown Court, which began on ITV 50 years ago this year. We've a special coming up later in the year in which we'll be remembering the series with several people, including Simon Park, who penned that iconic music. But we'd also like to hear your memories of the groundbreaking show too. Drop us a message at info@maidenmanchester.tv or send us a direct message on our Twitter page at Distinct by MIM.
Distinct drama. Fresh and original.
Available now on Distinct Nostalgia, a trilogy of comedy dramas by Carl Chetty, starting with Soft Centres.
When I think of how I've wasted my life here.
Starring Sir Derek Jacobi as Frankie.
Placing handmade soft centres and nut clusters into poncy dwarf coffins is hardly an achievement.
And Joanna Lumley as Millicent.
Oh, Frankie's well past this game. He's been here, 30-odd years. He'll be carried out in a box. It's probably a gold chockey box with red bows and ribbons.
And the story continues in Hard Centres.
Well, I'm supposed to be retired, you know, but I'm back in the basement, in my own little chockey grotto.
Starring Sir Derek Jacobi as Frankie and Imelda Staunton as Millicent.
I hear I like your new hat, sis.
I'll slap you in a minute, you cheeky run. You know it is my hat, it's my hair. Sebastian just done it. Incidentally.
Yes, and what's that dirty look for?
Your senorita's gone, but not forgotten.
My senorita?
What did you do to her? Show her your erogenous zone?
And we conclude with Dark Centres, starring Sir Derek Jacobi as Frankie and June Brown as Millicent.
Is there something going on between you two?
Chance to be a fine thing, but I'm working on it.
Helen Lederer as Mrs. Hamilton.
So he's given someone a box of Hard Centres instead of Soft Centres. So what? That's what dentists are for.
And Christopher Ryan as Mr. Hamilton.
Things are already at half cock. My tinnitus is getting worse, plus I can't sprint for a taxi anymore without wheezing and drawing on my inhaler.
So that's Soft Centres, Hard Centres, and Dark Centres by Carl Chetty. Available only on Distinct Nostalgia, wherever you get your podcasts.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM, and if you like what we do, then please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every penny helps us to make even more amazing content just for you. Go to distinctnostalgia.com and click on the donate button. Thank you.
So, in terms of your character and your co-star, as it were, tell us a bit about your relationship.
Well, we were the Mr. and Mrs. Normal. You know, everybody else was very eccentric. And we used to wonder sometimes. Roy would show up occasionally. And I've got to say, Roy Clark, still with us, 91 years old. I don't know if he's writing now, if he's just decided to not bother. But he wrote that series and all the other series himself with nobody else doing it. Just sat there and wrote and wrote and wrote. Amazing man. And if an episode was running short, he would fax a scene, and usually it would come to Sarah, Thomas and myself, because we were the youngest members, even though I had a bus pass by the end of it. We were the youngest members of the cast, and we could learn it quickly over lunch and then shoot it. So we were kind of Mr. and Mrs. Normal in amongst all this eccentricity. We were the most normal people there were, given the circumstances of what we were faced with. And I rather liked that. I think that was our thing. We were, and she was, we were in all the episodes together. I loved working with Sarah on that series, and she was always, I mean, she always knew her lines more than I did, and she was always there and very amenable to working with me and coming up with ideas and working around stuff, you know, that happened and things that went wrong. And she is a thorough professional, you know, really lovely woman.
One of the big jokes in it was always the women getting together and having a moan about the men, basically. That was always...
Drink your coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the main things.
Drink your coffee.
But we never really... Basically, they have to moan about the blokes, and you know, there was always a bit of a joke at the expense of Barry, wasn't there, in terms of what he'd been up to or not been up to, and Thora giving Glenda advice and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What we didn't really see a great deal of was Glenda and Barry. We saw bits of it, but not a huge amount of them at home doing things together, kind of thing, in a way.
No, but what we did get, we had scenes together, sort of around a table.
Yes.
Just the two of us in our, you know, sometimes its own little storyline, or sometimes referring to something else in the series. I will confess now that I don't watch myself.
Right. Okay.
Very rarely will sit down and watch myself in anything. I'm always, always disappointed because I think I'm doing something and I don't see it there. But other people like it, so
yeah.
Pleased by that. But whenever I'm flicking through the channels and it stops there and I think, oh, there's a scene with Glenda and Barry, I'll watch 2 minutes of this. The thing that I hadn't really, we didn't really sort of talk about or build in deliberately is the affection between the two of them. They always touch. She always puts her arms around him or goes over and gives him a kiss or waves her finger at him or they laugh together. There's little tiny incidental moments between them which give you the clue that they are absolutely made for each other. It's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely, definitely, definitely. But they were all in a way, we talked about Seaside Postcards and whatever earlier on. We mentioned that a few times.
Ronald McGill Postcards.
Yeah. I mean...
Nurse. I said, Pricky's Boyle. That one.
Last of Summer Wine wasn't like that, but the no. Characters are characters as in caricatures. You could have little cartoons of them and all the rest of it, couldn't they? Because you can... I presume there is. If you went to Holmfirth, I'm sure there are little things that, you know, I don't know, little ornaments or whatever that have Glenda and Barry. I'm sure there's probably, I bet there is somewhere along the lines.
Possibly, could be, maybe.
There'll be some huge.
We haven't got a Lego. Lego Last of the Summer Wine.
What response did you get to the characters in terms of people out there and people when people spoke to you in the street or wrote to you or anything like that?
I don't look a lot like that guy and I'm walking down the street. I don't wear a suit and a tie very often. I don't have particularly that image. So I don't get a great deal of that. And also I do live middle of London.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And people really...
You can just blend in, can't you, really? Just blend in.
I sat in a cafe. Well, people aren't interested in it. I mean, they let people alone. But I sat in a cafe a few years ago with Dudley Sutton and David Warner, two very eminent actors. And we were having a cup of tea in this place. And Bob Geldof was sitting at a table on the street in Chelsea on a busy Sunday afternoon with his kids and a dog. And there's we three, two of us very eminent. And I thought, well, yeah, people leave you alone. Bob Geldof, he's not, you know, he's very recognisable, the hair and the demise and the whole thing, you know. And it was like, I thought, yeah, people do leave you alone in London. You've got to be, I don't know who they would stop, you know. So I don't get that kind of attention.
Yeah. I'm in Manchester and you see Coronation Street cast all over the place and nobody's bothered. Everyone sees them as just part of their lives. You know, they're there all the time. No, I just wondered whether, you know, you know, in its heyday, whether you got any fan mail from people about
loads
Barry or anything like that.
Yeah. Fan mail came through. But it was like, but it was almost affectionate. I never got, very little that happened. I got the odd weird letter, but very little, really. It was always just people who loved the series, who liked me or whatever I was presenting, and people were always terribly nice. I never had any hostile stuff. It was very encouraging. I thought, well, I'm doing something right. You know, it was nice. It's pretty pleasant.
One of the biggest selling points, I think, of the series, of course, is its location, and the fact that it's in West Yorkshire, in Holmfirth, and that area. Fantastic theme tune as well, which of course it was done by
Ronnie
Hazelhurst, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who I remember apparently he used to interviewed his wife actually, and apparently the way he used to do the themes was that because he had to come up with them very quickly a lot of the time, he'd sing it in his head, basically. He'd just say, last of the summer, you know, and that's how it came. Like, it went on from there, basically. And I think people put words to it at one point. I think there's words to Last of the Summer Wine somewhere.
They weren't great. That was when when Bill died, they did Compo.
Put some
also
words
they
to
did
it, yeah.
a Compo
yeah.
episode. And they put, it sounded like the Mike Sam Singers or something, you know, and they put words to it. Peter Sallis used to say that if that tune hadn't been played every week, it would be regarded as highly as Elgar. And I agree. I think it's the most beautiful English music, kind of like an old English folk song.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It has a resonance to it that just touches you.
Absolutely.
And in any other circumstance, it would be much more highly regarded. But it was. It is a beautiful piece, and the incidental music, which Ronnie also wrote a lot of, but then got farmed out to Nigel Hess,
yes.
who is nowadays immensely eminent. Nigel's I know Nigel very well. We're good friends.
Well, he did the theme to Hetty Wainthrop, didn't he? Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hetty Wainthrop and Ladies in Lavender.
Yes, that's right.
His biggest hit.
Yeah.
And his stuff is things are recorded by some of the greatest musicians on the planet.
Yeah.
And he was writing us incidental music.
It's fantastic, you know? Fantastic.
You know?
So tell us a bit about, obviously, every time you did this series, you were up there in Yorkshire. Fantastic area. Just tell us a bit about the countryside, the people, the actual location.
I was, first of all, I stayed in Huddersfield, the Huddersfield Hotel, where the Marsden brothers looked after us royally. I mean, that was great. I realised after my first season there I would have to stop drinking because otherwise I was going to die. It was a big drinking area, Huddersfield. Huddersfield, very interesting town, lovely town.
It is, yeah. That hotel you're in is famous for being home of rugby league as well, isn't it? Huddersfield, that particular... Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the home...
Now you've got me.
I think it was there.
There we are.
Yeah, I think it's... If you go downstairs... There's loads of pictures. It was the home of rugby league, I think. So there you go.
Well, I'm blown. There we are, the Huddersfield Hotel, and it was our home. It was many people's home. I do remember, as it's today of all days of the year, I do remember Barry Cryer checking in one day. Barry died today, and I put a thing on Twitter earlier about it, but it was. Barry, I knew Barry a little. I'd done some bits with him, you know. And Barry, I did a Kenny Everett show with Barry at one point, and he was very generous. He was somebody who would go, "What do we do with this gag? What do we do with this? Let's try. You know, anybody speak any Welsh?" I said, "Well, no, not really. Well, he said, "It's too long. It's not funny. But we'll do, you know." But we were kicking stuff around. And there was Barry Cryer checking into the Huddersfield Hotel, having done his one-man show at the local theatre. And, of course, we all gravitated towards him after dinner, and we all sat there, and he was telling stories and stories. And I said, "I'm off to bed," and I literally had to drag myself away from them because he was such a great storyteller. And the next day's filming was a washout because they did not go to bed that night all of those old buggers did not go to bed. There's your Reddit. All of those actors didn't go to bed that night. They stayed up listening to Barry, exchanging stories, laughing. And I was next day I was up bright and early, driving, you know, getting out to location, doing all my thing. And they were like dish rags, a lot of them, but very happy. He's much missed. I'm very immensely fond of Barry, as everybody was. So there's my little tribute.
Yeah, no, I worked with Barry a couple of times. And,
did you?
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. I was very shocked actually, because I think he only a month ago he just started a new podcast with his son. You know, he was still active. He was still doing all sorts of things. You know, so very sad news. Absolutely. So yeah, just finally on that, on the countryside. Then, I mean, it's a beautiful location, well, isn't it? You know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. Probably one of the most beautiful counties I've ever been in. And I spent a lot of time there over a long period and walked and walked and walked. I walked the Pennines and I walked old railway tracks, long, long defunct. The wildlife was fabulous. The people were immensely generous and kind, not because I was on the telly, as they often are, out of the city, guarded, did sometimes tetchy, sometimes needed winning over, but always immensely helpful and enormously kind. And the beauty of the place, I mean, I used to rent a cottage. Eventually I rented a cottage over near Penistone. Lovely village with a cinema where they still had a cinema organ that came up in the interval of the film. And you were stepping back a bit in time, technologically speaking. And I had lovely, I just have very, very, very fond memories of all of the times I've spent in Yorkshire. And I was hanging out with a bunch of people one evening, local people. And I told them I'd been to Halifax that day, and this was in Huddersfield. And they said, oh, we never go there. And I said, why not? It's a different tribe. I said, okay. I do love going there. I filmed up in Geordieland up there. I filmed up there and there. Again, you find stuff. I'm filming up in Newcastle, which is a few years ago. And my friend Norman came over from Durham and he said, come on, I'll take you out for tea. He took me to this place and they had a vegan cake. I said, Norm, we've got to try some of this vegan cake, man. And the bloke behind me leaned over my shoulder looking at the ingredients. He said, I wonder what they use for lard. I'm so in the north. I said to the lady at the checkout, I'm going to forget this, the lady at the checkout recognised me off the telly and she said, you say, Barry, isn't it? And I said, yeah. She said, are you filming around here, Pat? And I said, no, I'm just up here doing something. She said, are you from round here, Pat? And I said, I'm not from London. She said, are you from Yorkshire? I said, no, I'm from Yorkshire either. I said, you know what? The truth is, I'm not from here. I'm not from Yorkshire. I'm not even from London, although I live there. I'm not even from there. I said, to be absolutely truthfully honest, I'm a complete fraud. And she said, don't you worry, Pat. She said, we embrace diversity here.
Brilliant, brilliant. But you're actually from Cheltenham Way, aren't you? Is that right?
Kind of West Country. West Country. Can hear it in my voice. I can hear it.
I can definitely hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
So Last of the Summer Wine, the longest running sitcom in the world. Why do you think it was so enduring? Why did it last so long? And what did it ultimately do for you?
Well, it gave me a profile. It gave me a living. It gives me some money now, even. It's played so often, I still get the odd residual from it, which is quite generous. I don't think you get that now. In terms of its popularity, it's lasted because... You've used the sexist word, but it's so mild within it. And because the women are so strong in it, every woman in it is very powerful and committed and not politically feminist, but in the true sense, their own person, as well as being warm-hearted. It has a pulse. You know, it came from Roy. You know, it's got Roy. Roy, you know, who could be Yorkshireman of the Year every year if he wanted to be. You know, he was very disregarded in a sense by the BBC. I mean, the stories about Roy and the BBC are legendary. He came to London once. He didn't like coming to London, but he came to London to an award, to some ceremony, and they didn't have his name on the list at the security place as you go into the BBC Centre. So he got in his car and he drove back to Yorkshire, because that's Roy. Because, you know, take me or leave me, you know, this is who I am. I admire him enormously. And it all, you know, in the beginning was the word, right? And that was the word, and Roy wrote it, and wrote the word was funny.
I always feel it always annoys me a bit, really, that, you know, obviously in the old days we had Yorkshire Television, we had Granada, we had ATV, we had these big ITV regions where everything was done in that area. You know, you'd get everything filmed in the area, filmed in the studios in Yorkshire and Granada or whatever. And it always annoys me a little bit, actually, if I'm being honest, that things like Open All Hours and Last Summer Wine and whatever, that the filming of the inside scenes were all done in TV Centre. You know, it often feels to me that actually it would have made much more sense, wouldn't it, to have had them in some studios not far away in Manchester or Leeds or wherever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, before the diversity, before Salford, really. Salford now would snap it all up.
Absolutely. You know? Although apparently I was interviewing the two women who played the inspector in Juliet Bravo, Stephanie Turner and Anna Carter. And apparently at one point halfway through, I think, that they did end up doing the filming at Pebble Mill. So they were halfway between the two. Absolutely bizarre. Mike, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Glad to hear all your stories, and presume you're still going strong, aren't you? Still acting, you're still doing things, is that right?
I still act, yeah. I still work when I can, and I really cracked the world of audiobooks a few years ago. So I built a little studio in my house for the lockdown because I couldn't go to studios. And now I'm able to go back to studios and record audiobooks again, which I really love doing. And I love doing radio. It's my favourite medium, I think, after the theatre, perhaps. And so I've been very fortunate in every phase of my career. Now I'm doing that.
Fantastic. Well, we you know, I run a radio production company, so we'll keep you in mind for any drama and comedy that's coming up. You never know. There might be something coming up.
Do?
But
yeah,
I do,
I love doing
having
radio.
Having heard your version of Peter Sallis, I think you should end up doing Wallace and Gromit.
I would love to do. I'd love to have done Wallace and Gromit. You know, I'd love to have done. I mean, he was a one-off, wasn't he, Peter Sallis?
He was indeed. Thank you very much indeed, Mike. That's brilliant.
Ashley, God bless you and keep you and be safe.
Thank you.
Mike Grady chatting to Ashley. And coming soon with more comedy nostalgia as we trip back to the early 2000s and the masterpiece that was Early Doors.
As soon as you walked out, we felt the love coming, the warmth. It was brilliant everywhere. You know what I mean? It was fantastic. We did the Apollo in London and Craig said, we're going to need subtitles here, you know. But we didn't. It just blew the roof off. They loved it, you know what I mean?
That's John Henshaw, coming soon to Distinct Nostalgia. As long as he doesn't get caught in those roadworks where it's all coned off all the way past McVitie's up to the bank on Birdhall Lane.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.